Okay, we have to start.
All right, so good afternoon, good evening, good morning, everyone dialing in. Wait, no, this is an in-person. I've been doing too many live or online sessions. So good afternoon, everyone. My name is Matthew Roach. I'm a senior program manager on the SQL Server Information Services team, which includes master data services and data quality services. And today I will be playing the role of business guy.
My name is Matt Mason. I am formerly a developer with the integration services team. I recently switched over to the program manager role, mostly because I was tired of doing real work. And today I will be playing the role of an IT guy.
And I want to tell you a story about the project that my IT guy built for me. So I've been reading magazines, technical manager magazines, and I realized that the information assets at my company could be used for more than just what they were designed for. So I've got these line of business systems. They might have information about products or about customers, maybe manufacturing and distribution. So all of the information that my business runs on. And I had an idea. So looks just like me. It's I have not yet gone to the office team to ask why they have my picture in their clip art, but it's a great, great likeness. Didn't wear the tie today. So I realized that with the right data in the right place, I could have scorecards and dashboards and insight into the data that I needed. Read a couple more magazines, great articles. Some of them were free online or were emailed to me. And I learned that a BI solution, so business intelligence, with an analysis services cube, maybe some Power Pivot or Power View reports on top of it, would allow me to have this insight into the data, make better decisions. You guys know BI, so I'm not going to go into the details. Work with the IT team to build out a data warehouse. Work with the development team. Boy, developers are smart. Worked with the developer team to build an ETL subsystem to pull the data out of these source systems through the data warehouse into the cube, and I am the hero. Do you see those happy team members behind me? They've never before had access to this data. I am on a fast track for promotion. Or am I? What I didn't realize is that the data in these systems, these source systems, may not have been exactly the data that we needed. It may not have been in the state that we needed for it to be used in a BI application. So the more users I have accessing this system, which I was the sponsor, I went out, I got executive sponsorship, found the budget, got the team, this is my baby, and the users are coming back and saying, I can't use this. It's not right. The data that's coming back isn't valid. You know, your regions are wrong, your products are wrong, the customer data is wrong. And the more users that use it, the more data they find. So we get more developers involved. We're tracing this back to the source systems. We find more and more garbage that's going in. And you know the phrase, garbage in, garbage out. Well, I didn't realize it when I started, but apparently my entire enterprise information infrastructure is like a landfill of garbage. No matter where you go, there's these problems. And I did some work. I'm the business guy, right? So I can do some root cause analysis and total cost of this and that. I figured out that 70% of the total effort that I put into building this, so time and budget, my budget that I went out and got, went into building this ETL subsystem. And I did a little bit of research. I read another book, not just a magazine article this time. So this is a typical number. So if you look at the Kimball Group, they do data. I should have hired the Kimball Group. Sorry. The number is typical for this, despite the fact that problems are getting through into the end state. I asked myself, it can't actually be this bad, right? This can't be a standard thing. But looked at Information Week. They did a survey last year. They said that the top barrier for adoption of business intelligence applications is data quality. If you build it, they'll come. But when they come and they see that the data isn't valid, then they'll go back to the things that they had before you built it. And of course, it's not just about BI. BI is very, very typical, because BI is all about taking the data that you used to look at through a keyhole in that line of business application. So it's you looked at it in just one very specific way that it was designed to be used, and it looked great. With BI, it's like opening up the door where you can look at it through a wider lens from any angle. So here, the top three impediments to information management success from that same Information Week survey, all related to data quality. And it just goes on and on and on. Fortunately, though, I got this email. There's a conference going on in Orlando this week. So it's like Microsoft something something. And there's going to be a presentation there about data curation and enterprise information management tools with SQL Server 2012, which is the newest, latest version of Microsoft's flagship database product. And it's got these three different parts. It has master data services, which is a place where you can store the golden records, the known good data, so that you know it has tools and workflows and approvals and versioning and all these things that you need to make sure that the data is always in the right state and that the right people are doing it. You're enabling your business users who understand the data. We also have data quality services, which will allow you to take the business knowledge, put it in a knowledge base, and use it to cleanse, either interactively cleanse or, as part of the batch process, cleanse data, working with integration services, which is this great tool for moving data and integrating data between applications. And now I need to have a conversation with my IT guy to see how he can get me out of this problem. So. Yeah, so
as the IT guy, this is the initial report that I put together. Now, in my defense, the requirement was to have a report against the data. There was no requirement for the data to actually be accurate, right? This is what the data looks like when it came out of my source system, right? And this is pretty typical. Data is rarely BI ready, right? It was, like Matthew said, it was developed for specific applications or it's manually entered or whatever. So there's usually some sort of process you need to go through to actually make sure that the data is accessible and the data is in a good state to create reports with.
So I needed to explicitly tell you that not only did I need this report, I needed it to be right.
That's right.
On our new project form, we should have a should be right checkbox.
That's right.
So, and I mentioned earlier, I'm not very good at geography. I'm pretty sure there is no state called BE. And
again, in my defense, I am Canadian. I don't know much about the U.S. states or whatever. B looked right to me.
So, but it says CA. That's Canada, right?
That must be Canada.
So,
yeah.
And users are coming back and telling me that Calif and California should actually be the same thing. So how are we going to solve this?
Exactly. Well, let's take a look at the different technology. So the three technologies that make up enterprise information management. First, we have SSIS. Anybody here using SSIS today? Everybody.
Happy people.
Yes, all happy. Everybody loves SSIS. And SSIS, like when you boil it down, right, SSIS is for moving data, right? Moving data from point A to point B and merging data and transforming data and stuff. So you guys all know SSIS. I won't go into that. Data Quality Services, or DQS, is one of the new products in 2012. When it comes down to it, a single term, I call DQS a spell checker. Right? The product team
hates
it when you summarize 3 years of work in a single term.
You should be in marketing.
Yeah, right. But when it comes down to it, that's what DQS is really doing, right? It's a really smart spell checker with a ton of functionality and features, but when it comes down to it, that's what you're doing. You're correcting existing data, right? Finally, we have Master Data Services, MDS. MDS took me a while to wrap my head around. I kept thinking, why do I need this? Okay? And imagine the scenario. I have a bunch of Excel files, and I'm managing my reference data, a customer list, for example, and all these different Excel files. And you first logical step to create a real system over that is you want to consolidate, right? So I create a SQL table, I go around to all these Excel files, I add those values to the SQL table, and I think I'm done, right? But what happens when you want to start adding values to that? Am I going to be the gatekeeper? Am I going to be the one adding? Do I give permission to other people to add? What about adding new attributes? Is there a workflow to add new values? Is there some sort of sign-off process? Like, there's all kinds of process around managing that list, right? That's what MDS gives you. MDS has all that. When it boils, when you simplify it down, MDS can just be a reference table. It's just a place where your SSIS packages go to do lookups against, right? And do you need MDS? Well, no, but you can also argue, do I need SQL Server? I'm happy storing my data in Excel, right? So it's just a better way to do this sort of consolidation. Okay. So we talk about the whole data curation process. This is the process you're going to go through to actually do the data cleansing and stuff. And it starts off with cleansing. This is what you use data quality services for, right? You have dirty data. You do some cleansing with it. You're going to do matching after you cleanse the data. And matching is like the deduplication process. So customer lists, for example, right? And it's always better to match against a list that's already been cleaned. You'll get better results. And then you have to manage it. So you have this clean list of data. What am I going to do with it? How do I make sure that other people get to make use of it? And that's where MDS comes in. I can manage my cleansed data. Then throughout this whole process, I'm using SSIS to do integration and automation of it, to do the bulk data movement through this whole system. Okay. So when it boils down, this is what the end-to-end process is going to be. So I've put together a quick demo today to show Matthew how easy it is to do this sort of data cleansing. It's so easy even a business user could do it.
It's so easy even an IT guy can talk about it. I'm going to get you with the water at some point before the session is done.
Okay, so quick recap. This is what our report starts off looking like, right? I pulled the sales data that the business user gave to me. This is what I end up getting. So the data that the business user gave to me came in Excel. Okay, I have a product table or product sheet, sorry, that lists all products and sales and customers. I have a list of products, a list of valid products that we actually have.
Which I gave to him.
Which he gave to me, and then a list of customers, customer information. So the first part I'm going to tackle is this top part here, all of these products, because there's a lot of duplicate products in here. Okay? I'm going to go into Data Quality Services. Now, Data Quality Services has three main components to it. It has a server component. It runs on top of SQL Server. It's not a standalone server. It's just going to run as part of your SQL instance. It does all the heavy lifting. It does the cleansing, the matching, all the real processing. There is an SSIS component to it. An SSIS DQS cleansing transform, right? It lets you do batch data cleansing. And this is the Data Quality Services client. Through the client, I'm going to create my knowledge base. I'm going to define what's called domains and define all my data cleansing rules. And I can also do data cleansing directly through the client. So let's start off by creating this knowledge base. Okay, we'll call this products, and click next. And then once I've created my knowledge base, I'm going to create what's called a domain. And a domain is a field of data. Okay? In this case, I'm going to have a domain called product. And I have a couple of options here. I can enter, the data type. I can change the language. I can enable spelling. We have a whole list of languages that the field applies to. I can turn on spell checking, click OK.
So I used this once, and I chose French, but everything I typed in was still in English. Is that a bug?
No, it doesn't make the user speak that language, unfortunately, but it applies validation logic accordingly. So there's a couple main tabs here. We have a reference data tab, and this lets you hook up a domain to an online reference data service to actually do cloud-based data cleansing, and I'll talk about that a bit later. I can have rules, so I can define a rule like this value must match this regular expression. It must be this long. It must contain a number type thing. I have domain values. Domain values are a list of valid values and invalid values for that domain. Okay, so here, by default, every domain is going to have this null value. This is a null equivalency. I'm going to say null is not allowed inside of my domain.
Null is not allowed. Any Delta flyers in the crowd? Not allowed. Never mind.
I can also do is I can define null equivalencies, right? I could have NA, for example, right? That could be defined as a null equivalency, and so DQS will treat that as if it was a null.
Or if you have like a 99999 to say that you don't know the zip code, something like that.
Exactly.
I do that all the time in my Excel spreadsheets.
Yeah, and that's why the data comes out so accurate. So here I'm going to browse and select that Excel file. I'm going to say product family. That's the list of products that I was given. And we've imported those values in, and now I have a list of products here. And I see that the top one right here, there's a little red squiggly line.
I meant to fix that. That should have been fixed before you got it. I think that was someone else who was supposed to do that.
Right. And so we have the squiggly line because we had enabled spell checking, right? And it's noticing that there's some spelling mistakes there. One thing I noticed about this data, and this might be common, is that we're using common abbreviations here, right? Like win instead of windows. And I want to standardize this data. So I'm going to say, okay, this value isn't correct. It should actually go to Windows Small Business Server Essentials, which is really hard to type with everybody watching you. And let's scroll down, because I think I saw another red squiggly. Yeah, I saw another squiggly here, and let's mark that as incorrect as well. And we'll say that this is Windows Small Business Server Premium 2008. Okay, so I've created my list of values, I've created some correction rules, I've said this should be automatically corrected to this, and I'll click finish to publish my knowledge base. And once my knowledge base is published, I can start using it. I can do cleansing. I can use it from SSIS. I can do different things with it.
So basically what we're doing is we're taking the business knowledge about what the right data is, and then when we know that there's sometimes a specific problem, we're saying take this bad data and turn it into this good data.
Right, exactly. And so one of the neat things about enterprise information management is that brings together the business users who know the data, who know how to do these corrections, and the IT people, right? Normally, they don't like to talk. EIM is a way of bringing together and having everybody love each other. It's fantastic.
So far, it's not working today.
No. So I'm going to do this cleansing. I just named my cleansing project. So everything in DQS is project-based. Everything gets stored up on the server. So because if you're cleansing like millions of rows, if you're cleansing a lot of data, it can take a while to do. It's not going to be a interactive process. You might do it over days, for example. So everything, all your state gets persisted, so you can resume anytime you want. I'm going to pick that Excel file again, and I'm going to be cleaning my sales data to clean up the product. I map my product to, I picked the wrong knowledge base in here. Let me start this over again.
You were saying that it's so simple.
So simple, you can, yeah, even a business user could do it.
Just checking.
Yeah. So here, let's pick that product knowledge base I just created. Excel file, browse, customer sales, and that was the sales table. And I will map product to product. Click next. And on this next page, when I click start, it's actually going to upload the results, the data to the DQS server, so DQS can do its processing on the server. And I get some really basic profiling. It tells me how long it took to run. So we had 767 rows. It took about 2 seconds to process, which is good. And it gives me a basic profile of what happened, the types of rows it's seen, it saw. On the accuracy thing here, I can actually see the percentages of values. Now, this is not good. Only 4% of my values are marked as correct or corrected.
So nothing's red. That's got to be good.
Nothing red, that is good. But the fact that I have so few rows that were automatically corrected, it means that my rules probably aren't that great. Think about data quality. I think about DQS and your knowledge base as a filter, right? You're running water through it. The better your filter, so the more rules you add to it, the cleaner the water gets as it flows through, right? So data quality itself is sort of an iterative process. You're going to keep building up rules and making your system smarter and smarter. So let's take a look at the type of values that it wasn't able to automatically correct. So these are the ones. So up at the top, I can see the different tabs, the different things. Suggested means they're the ones that it was actually able to correct. I see these look pretty accurate, right? They should all go to Windows Server, right? If I go to the new tab, I see a lot of things it didn't know how to handle.
Those aren't new. Those have been in the product catalog forever.
Yeah, exactly. But they weren't in that list of products that were sent to me. We're noticing here that there's a lot of abbreviations, a lot of common business terms we're using here. Win, bus, server, essentials, things like that. So we're going to make use of a DQS feature called term-based relations. Okay. I'll also show off another DQS feature where I can actually create a new knowledge base here from an existing file, import from a DQS file. So I previously created this knowledge base. You can export a knowledge base or export a domain out to a file and use that file, share that file within your organization, share that file with other users, post it online if you want, if you have a really cool knowledge base that everybody wants access to. So this is going to automatically import the knowledge base I created before.
And is that going to have all of the values and the rules and all the things that you were talking about? Is that all in that one DQS file?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So this is like a cooking show. So you don't have to watch me type everything. This is pre-created. Now, what I've done here is I've created a separate domain for license quantity because I just wanted to show these domain rules and what they look like. So here I've created a really simple rule for this domain that says license quantity always has to be greater than zero. If it's not, then...
Well, you keep talking. I'm just looking to see, lots of options there.
Yeah, there's lots of options. Lots of options there. Right? Value is greater than, is equal to, is not equal to. Right? There's all kinds of, all the things that you'd expect in a sort of expression builder here.
And if this is a number, so those are all for numbers?
That's right. If it was a string, you'd have, it matches this regular expression, is this length, things like that.
That's pretty clever.
So under product, we have all the domain values that I had imported before, and I have my correction rule that I set up down at the bottom. These are synonyms saying that this must be mapped to this. I also am using a thing called term-based relations, or TBRs. Okay? TBRs, it's like a find and replace on the string. Right? Whenever, before any other processing is done or any other cleansing, we're going to go in and find this value and replace it with another value. This isn't the type of correction that could be done programmatically, or by a correction algorithm, right? This is custom business logic abbreviations that I know, that I use, I'm going to replace before any other type of comparison is done. And for English, for example, I'm saying that just strip English out entirely. I'm not tracking language as part of this. I want all the products to be treated the same. Okay. Let's publish this up. And then we'll run through our data cleansing process again. New projects. I'll call this P3. Let's select my correct knowledge base.
Very intuitive names that you have there.
Mm-hmm. And Excel, browse again to my file. And so this time, when it goes through, we should be using our brand new rules and our brand new term-based relations to help us with the cleansing process. By the way, never mind. I won't mention that until the end. I have a secret story to tell.
That's a good teaser.
Yeah.
They're not going to leave now.
Yeah, exactly. Now you have to stay till the end to find out what I was going to talk about.
He's not going to remember.
So here we see the more suggestions now. And if I go down to the corrected tab, we actually see all of our rows ended up being corrected in one way or another, right? They're either suggested or corrected.
What's the difference between the two?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. So it all comes down to confidence. Okay? We have this confidence field here. So there's a system-wide setting. You can say, what's my minimum confidence level? If the correction is above that confidence level, the value gets moved to the corrected tab. If it's below that confidence level, it becomes what we call an auto-suggest or suggested value. And if it's suggested, this is where the data steward would come along and review these results and say, yes, this is right, or no, this is not right. I have these tabs over here for approve and reject. I actually have a button that says approve all. So I'm just going to click approve all, and that will move them from the suggested tab over to the corrected tab.
And do they end up as part of the list of known good values now?
That's exactly it. It's so as part of this data cleansing process, we're building up rules. And these rules are going to be stored as part of the project. And after you're done, somebody can come and import all those rules that you just built in your data cleansing project back into the knowledge base. So the next time you run data through it, they get automatically cleansed.
So the more you use it, the better it gets.
That's right.
I like that.
So on this final tab of my project, I have the option to export my values. Okay? And I can export to a SQL Server table. I can export to Excel. Right? A business user might go ahead and just export to Excel and continue on their way. They don't need to. They're happy.
We love Excel.
Exactly. From an IT person's perspective, or an SSIS developer's perspective, the most important part here are those rules, because I'm going to import those rules back to the knowledge base. Because when I do my batch cleansing using SSIS, I can reuse all those rules that the business user just generated for me. Okay. So if we go back to the reports, let's take a look at this is the sales cleanse data. Whoops, wrong report, wrong sheet. So if we look at the problems with the report, now we've fixed all the product names, but we still have the address problems, right? We're looking at the customer data, looking at all their addresses. There's still some problems there. So we're not quite done with the data quality phase. And if I look at my customer's sheet, right, I'm noticing that there's different variants inside of states. Sometimes it says it's the two-letter abbreviation. Sometimes it's the full word. Sometimes it's wrong. I'm missing cities, right? So this is common customer problems that we see with customer data. So I'm going to go back to DQS. Let's finish this project. And now I've, again, cooking show moment. I've pre-created my knowledge base with all the domains that I need to do the full data quality solution here. Opening up my knowledge base, and I see I have some new domains here. All the ones I need for address cleansing and for customer name, for customer information validation. Okay. I also have what's called
I was just going to say address cleansing is very complex. This is something that some of my other IT teams have tried to tackle and failed. So, there's a lot of problems in that data. So we don't have a lot of time to fix that?
DQS is a very elegant solution, a very simple solution for it. So my first step is to create what's called a composite domain. And a composite domain is made up of subdomains. Okay? And so things like city and state, right? They're valid by themselves. But what you want to be able to check is the city Las Vegas is in the state Nevada, right? It's not in state Washington. So you want to be able to have that validation logic where things get validated together. Addresses are the classic example here, right? I want to validate the address, the city, the postal code, and the state. I want to validate that they're all correct, okay? Now, this is where reference data services come in. So there's this thing called the Windows Azure Data Market. They're always changing, or maybe it's just the Azure Data Market. I don't know, they keep changing the name. But through the Azure Data Market, I can actually subscribe to these data cleansing services. So what I'm doing here is there's a service called Melissa Data. Melissa Data does address cleansing for me. Okay? I don't want to build the address cleansing logic myself. Right? It's too complicated, especially when you start talking about worldwide addresses and things like that. Right? So what I do is I subscribe to this service. I map my domain columns to what Melissa Data tells me they want. I can show that. And then when I actually run, this is the schema that they're telling me that they expect. And when I actually run it, DQS is going to send the data up to the RDS, the reference data service, and the data is going to come back for me clean, okay? Which is really neat. I'll show that in a second.
So in that magazine article that I read, they were talking about not just data cleansing, but data augmentation as well. Does it actually give us more data?
That is exactly what reference data services do, and I'll show that in a bit. So RDS is not only clean your data, but they actually give you more data back. Melissa Data, for example, will fill in the latitude and longitude for any address that you give it. It will give you the district that it's in, the political riding that it's in. It does a whole bunch of different things like that. And there's different, I think, yeah, there's a number of RDSs out there today to cover a lot of common data cleansing scenarios. Address cleansing probably being the most common, I think there's three separate address cleansing providers, all with different strengths up in the data market. Okay. So that was my fully completed knowledge base, and now let's do some customer cleansing. So again, I'm going to pick that same Excel file.
And each time you're just starting up a project, pointing to the data that you want to cleanse, choosing the knowledge base, and saying go?
That's right, yeah. And so I select my knowledge, and the source of the data can either be Excel or it can be SQL Server. So I can import from an existing SQL Server table. I'm using Excel here because that's where all my source data was. So here I'm picking the customer's worksheet. I'm going to map my columns up. So address to address, city to city.
Dust to dust.
That's right. I'm also going to map phone number. I didn't show that as part of my knowledge base, but there's another reference data service provider up there called CDyne, and they actually do phone number verification. And they also do data augmentation where you send in the phone number, they're going to do validation for you, but they actually return what phone company owns it, what city it's registered to, all additional data, which is actually really neat. So even though those fields aren't part of your original data set, you use data quality services for data augmentation as well as cleansing.
So one of the things that I've wanted to do is to get a report with a map so that I can see where my customers are. Is that something that you could work on this weekend?
It's something that's possible, weekend.
But we've got the lat long now, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
I'll be golfing, but you can send me an email or text message or something to let me know how it works out.
Right. That's always a problem of letting your bosses know what the product is capable of, because then there's always the off chance that they'll ask you to do it.
This looks like it's going to save you a ton of time, though.
That's true. So I just cleansed all my data. Everything is cleansed and corrected. I see that Melissa Data was able to correct, about 54% of my values, and the rest are suggested. Nothing comes back as invalid, which is always good. Next, let's just take a quick look at the results and see what it looks like. Let's make that a little bit bigger. Oops, not the confidence field. I want to make this field a little bit bigger so I can actually see the type of corrections that it made. So the column on the left is the original value. I see it's 100 legends, and they actually corrected that to legends way. And actually, I see two records with the exact same address, so that's going to be a potential for a match later on. So I see the type of corrections that make. I can also see that it did my the standardization, right? So before I had the full state name, and now it is corrected down to just the state MA. Right? Standardization and consistency is another very important part of data cleansing.
And that's going to save you money on mailings as well, because the post office is going to give you discounts if your addresses are in the standard format if you do bulk mailing. So
one
of my old customers did that.
That's interesting. So the rows that it marked as new, these are things that DQS didn't know how to handle, and this was because the source data didn't have enough values there, right? I'm missing fields from my source data. So Boston, for example, I don't have the customer's address, so I can't actually do the validation on it.
So we'll probably get one of the team, someone who's in the office tomorrow, to go and research this customer. We'll fill it out, right?
Exactly, right. And that's typically the role of the data steward role, who would actually go in and validate, yes, this customer is at this address, and actually enter in any missing data. But the majority of it is done for them automatically. Okay, so after doing all the processing, I could export those results. Let me just show that pre-created report. And this is what we end up with. Whoops. This is what we end up with in the end. We have our corrected states. Sorry, I'm not an Excel whiz. We have our corrected product names across the top. We've gotten rid of that state BE down the side, and we now have a report that's actually usable.
That is awesome. That is exactly what we need.
Exactly.
So, promotion.
Okay, so the last thing I just wanted to talk about really quickly is about...
You want to show the phone numbers too?
Oh, the phone numbers. I forgot to show the augmented data and the phone numbers. You're right. So let me go back. Oh, actually, no, right here I can show it. So remember I said at this point I have a choice to export my results. And part of these exported results are the added fields, right? Like this is the phone number verification that I added in. It shows me what phone company was actually registered to that phone number, for example.
What about the line that's blank, the one that's up one?
That was probably one that couldn't be validated or didn't have a phone number.
But we're not going to find it on the screen.
No, we're not going to find it on the screen. What I was going to show is the latitude and longitude from Melissa data here. So for every address, it's actually giving me back the lat and long, right? I think it gives the altitude as well, so you could have a 3D map of where your customers are for
Sunday.
Yeah, right. Again, yeah, you shouldn't talk about features that you don't want to implement. Okay. The last thing is about batch data movement and bulk data movement. So what we just showed was the interactive process, right? I'm actually doing it through data quality services, building up my rules. Of course, you can do everything the same thing through SQL Server integration services with the DQS cleansing transform, right? I map my incoming columns, I can do my cleansing, and there's a couple different common scenarios here. One, I mean, the ideal scenario is I have control over my source data, I can do my cleansing, and I can update it directly, right? I just go and update all the fixed values. But in a lot of cases, I don't actually own those source systems. The source systems, those values are being used by other things. I can't go in and actually collect it. So another common scenario that we see is using SSIS to sort of do profiling on these remote systems. Okay? So what I'm doing here is I create this logging entry in a database. And I'm using an SSIS data flow to first connect to a source system. Okay? I pass it through DQS through data quality services to do the actual cleansing. And out of DQS, I'll get all my values, all the corrected values, and a status of whether the row is good or bad or corrected or invalid. Right? And I'll split. And what I want to do here is I'm going to take counts. I want to count how many rows are good, how many rows are corrected. All the bad rows, I'm going to dump into a database table. Right? Now, using this, I can produce a report that says, okay, in this source system, I have this many bad values. Here are the bad values. I can give that to the owner and say, please go and correct this. So if I run this.
And what is underneath that DQS transform? What is that doing?
So the DQS transform, what you do is you map it to one of your knowledge bases. You map the incoming columns to the domains. And
so all of the work that my team does, the business team does, getting that knowledge in there with the values and the rules and the reference cloud services and stuff, that's all in there, and you can just plug it into your workflow?
Exactly, yeah. This is where the business user and the IT user merge together. You can actually work together.
And the more rules and values and stuff that we have, the more problems that we can solve, so we can start bringing in more of those other systems that you said were out of scope because the ETL would cost too much?
Exactly, right.
Next week.
Yeah, okay. So using this sort of profiling, what I did was I created a really simple report. So this is going to, you know, I ran this package against multiple systems. I get a quick rundown. I have three separate machines. I get a breakdown of, okay, it has this many good rows, this many rows that would be automatically corrected, and this many bad rows in it, right? I'm sort of doing a really simple profile so I can maybe track with a dashboard or something what the statuses of all my source systems are.
Could we do this in green?
Yes, that will take a week of implementation, though. Okay.
Green is always the most expensive color for reports. I don't know why, but
yeah.
It's from the paper they used to have with the green lines.
Right. Okay. So back to the deck.
So if I've got this right, DQS is going to give us the ability to take that business knowledge, the thing that the core players who run the business and really understand what's right and what's wrong in the data, it's going to take that, store it as knowledge in this central SQL knowledge-based repository. And on top of that, it's going to do some statistical, algorithmic, computer thing to do data cleansing, matching to remove duplicates, you said?
Right. So that's one of the main differences between data quality services and other cleansing solutions. It doesn't just do things with algorithms. It has algorithms to do cleansing, but it also uses knowledge. We call it a knowledge-driven data quality process.
Yep. Yeah. And even though we didn't show off the phone numbers, I met a nice young lady last night who gave me her phone number. She said her name was Jenny, but the phone number was 867-5555,
right.
And it didn't work when I tried to call her. So after the session, maybe we can
run it through data quality and see what you get.
Okay. Absolutely.
That's not creepy at all.
So, and she said that she liked cats, now that I think about it.
Yeah, that's always really creepy. Okay, so next we have master data services. So three main steps to building up your master data services solution. Okay, we are going to first create entities. Right, this is going to be your master data entities. In our case, we can have an entity for products. We could also have an entity for customers. And I think I'll show the customer entity here. Next, we can set attributes for those entities. We define the model. We define properties. We can link entities together. And then we're going to go into the deduplication step. We're actually going to take a look at our customer data and run through a deduplication process to basically find where all of our duplicates are.
Sounds complicated. Sounds like data modeling with expensive tools and things like that.
Yes, and it is not. I am going to show how to get up a fully operational data model in 30 seconds.
So are you going to say that this is something that a business user can do too?
This is something that a business user can do. You'll see a common theme with the SQL Server.
It better be in Excel.
Yeah. You'll see a common theme with the SQL Server and enterprise information management tools. They are so simple that a business user can use them. For some reason, our marketing team doesn't use that as a marketing slogan, but I think it's pretty effective when I'm talking to an SSIS audience. So Master Data Services has a couple of different ways of interacting with it. At a high level, we have, one way, the administration for MDS is done, all done through this web UI. It has this web where I can actually create my models, I can expose my models so other systems can query them, I can set up user permissions, assign permissions to the models to different people. I can also, you see here, I have a link to install an add-in for Microsoft Excel. The other way, the most common way, I think, for interacting with MDS is through this Excel plugin, where I actually do all my data modeling, all my data publishing, making my changes, right? And again, it's so simple a business user could use it.
And this is new in SQL Server 2012, right, this add-in?
That's right. So Master Data Services was introduced in SQL Server 2008 R2, I believe. And In R2, we had the web interface. Most of the interaction was done through the web interface and also a web service API. Now in 2012, it's all in Excel.
I need to see Excel.
Okay. So let's go back to, so here I have my cleansed customer list here. And I am going to select all the data. Okay. I'm going to click this Create Entity button.
So there's a master data tab. Is that what the add-in gives you?
That's right, yeah. When you install the add-in, it's going to create this master data tab. I'm just going to connect to the MDS server. So the MDS server exposes a full web services interface. So if you want to create your own custom applications to do your own management or integrate with other systems, that's another good way to do it. So I've selected all my customers. I click the Create Entity button. Okay, I'm going to enter in some information. I select my model. Let's call this Customers. Now there's two fields I need to enter for MDS. One's going to be a code, so some sort of unique identifier. In my case, I actually have a code within my source data. But if I didn't have that code, I could say generate it automatically if I wanted to, and MDS will just give me a code. So in this case, I'll just use customer ID. And then I pick my name, so customer name. I click OK. Now this is going to do two things. It's actually going to create my entire model for me. So my entire data model has just been created, and it's going to publish the initial data up for me.
So all the time that you used to budget for create table statements on your time card, that's what we're doing here?
Exactly, yeah. So all of the modeling, like we did with those complicated data modeling tools that we used to use, now can just all be done straight through Excel. If it's publishing up. So it creates the model, and then it actually publishes all the data up as well. And so now I have a fully functional data model right here.
But this is just an Excel spreadsheet, isn't it? How is that a data model? I mean, obviously Excel is a data model, but...
So it is an Excel spreadsheet, but underneath it's actually talking to the server. So if I were actually to create a brand new sheet here and select my model and select the entity I just created, customers, right, it's actually going to the server and downloading that value back into Excel. So I can do all my management, even though the values are actually persisted up on the server, I can do all my management through Excel and download on another machine, for example, or I can make changes. If I make a change, it doesn't get persisted back up into MDS until I click the publish button. Right.
So I can make changes in Excel and save it back to one location so I don't need to keep emailing the different copies of the spreadsheets to everyone?
Exactly.
You guys like that, though, don't you?
So we know business users like emailing spreadsheets to people. So you can still do that, right? Within MDS, you can actually create a filter or create a query to query down to certain rows. So, for example, you could say, Bob owns this set of customers. Let me filter that down, send them the MDS workbook. They can make the changes or make the corrections to those set of customers, and then publish it back up to the model. So you can still email your Excel workbooks around.
Awesome.
But the core data is still stored on the MDS server itself. Yeah. Okay. So let's go back to the customer sheet. I'm just going to do one thing to my model. So like I said, my model is fully functional now. I'm going to link it to another model, another entity that I have. So here I have state, and I had pre-created another entity. So I do constrained list, and this is going to be states. This is the way you chain your entities together, right, and create relationships. And you can actually create hierarchies. Yeah, go ahead. You can actually create hierarchies and stuff. So, for example, I have a hierarchy in this. Yeah, exactly. And
Where's BE on that list?
Yeah, so BE has been removed because this is off our cleanse data, thankfully.
Ah.
And so I can actually create a hierarchy, too. For example, I have a region and a district under that region and then a state under that district, right? So I can actually create these hierarchies using MDS as well, which is perfect for my BI tools.
So we cleansed the data. We got it into a good state. We loaded it into MDS.
Yep.
And now we have Excel as the tool to manage the data, and it does things like these relationships so that it doesn't even let us enter the bad data. I couldn't even put...
Exactly. It prevents you from typing in the wrong values here even. Okay. So now we had... So we have our model. We need to do some deduplication on it. Let me just show real quick. So there's two main actions that you take in data quality services, right? There's the cleansing and there's also the matching. MDS has match functionality too. If we look at MDS right here, we see that there's a match data button. And thankfully, that is using data quality services underneath. We're finally reusing technologies, which is fantastic. Anyways, so we click match data, and that's going to use DQS. There's two ways to do matching. One is if I don't predefine a matching policy, right? All fields are treated equal. All fields are treated as strings. It's just going to do a brute force comparison. But I can also fine-tune the way I want to do matching by establishing a matching policy. Let me go into this. A matching policy lets me pick certain fields. Cancel that? Yeah, I was open already. A matching policy lets me pick certain fields and assign weights to them. Okay, so here I've selected my knowledge base. I say matching policy.
So if you assign weights to those fields, do those fields get stronger than the other fields?
They do get stronger than the other fields. That's exactly it. And so let me just pick my data to go through here. I'm going to be using my updated. I'll do cleanse customers. And this is all the address data that I'm going to be building my matching data for. All right, and so this is a way to make your matching more efficient and make the matching process more efficient. Because overall, matching can be a very expensive process, right? It can take a long time to actually do a match or to actually figure out a match, right? The brute force way of doing matching is to take one value and compare it to every other value in your database, right? So the time it takes, the complexity it takes can go up exponentially. Creating a matching policy lets you do things like say, okay, I know my state value is correct. If the state value doesn't match the other row, stop comparing. Stop making comparisons, right? So it lets you eliminate which type of comparisons that are going to be done. So I've actually predefined, let me get rid of my customer name thing. Oh, clicked too many times.
It's a good thing they added that cancel button.
Yeah, exactly. So let me... let me skip the matching policy. So basically, you select your fields and you say it's going to be this weight, or if the phone number is a match, it's more likely that these rows are a match as well. Okay. So back to MDS within Excel, I'm going to click this match data button, and that's going to go and send these values up to a data quality services. It's automatically picked the columns and the domains matched by name. Click OK. It sends it up to DQS. And again, DQS very efficient with its matching policy. There's actually an update done in CU1, 2012 CU1, that drastically increased the performance of matching. And because I've predefined my matching policy, it actually works pretty fast here. And this is my results. So part of the matching, what matching process is going to do is going to create these things called clusters. And a cluster, basically, anytime it detects that the rows are similar or are potential matches, it's going to create a cluster, add a cluster ID in there. Okay, so here we see, let me zoom in a little bit. Here we see two entries. We see the cracker at the top and the cracker box, and they're both at the same address. So these are very likely to be the same entry. Okay? Some other things, chop suey Chinese, it's a restaurant, and matched with some Chinese characters. That's very likely the same address. They have the same address. It's very likely a match as well. If I scroll down a little bit, I see a couple of hungry coyotes, and I saw another hungry coyote further down, 22. Right here. Yeah. So this one wasn't detected as a match, and that's probably because this entry here has an address, right? I see an address field, and these hungry coyotes don't have address fields in there. So those poor coyotes. There wasn't enough fields in there to automatically determine that they were a match. So part of the matching process, there's still going to be some involvement here. But I can just take that cluster ID, and I'm going to put it down here to link them together.
Can you also just take the address from down here? Can you complete the data in the other ones right inside Excel?
I can do that. That's Let me do that right now.
What can't Excel do?
So I'll paste that in, and right, and it's highlighted in a certain color to show that these changes are local, and I need to actually publish them up to the server to make them part of the official model.
Have you ever eaten there?
I have never eaten at the Hungry Coyote.
Their Roadrunner is awesome, but it sells out really fast.
Okay, keep that in mind. So this cluster ID column, you have to decide what you do from here. Right. So again, the ideal scenario, I find duplicates, okay? I can go and delete the extra duplicates and go back to my source systems and replace all those codes, right? So here, right, because remember, this data came from another system, right? And that system has two entries with two separate codes. We can't simply go in and delete all code 59s because that might be used by other tables, right? So we need to figure out our own process of how to do this. We need to either, the ideal thing is you tell the person or tell the owner of the system, you're going to need to update this code. Maybe you build that into an SSIS package to do it automatically.
But it's
going
to take like 6 months to change that mainframe system. I don't think that we can do that. It's not in scope.
Exactly. You can't always do that. So the another approach is to actually keep this cluster ID column. Okay? I'm actually going to keep cluster ID as part of my model. Cluster ID is going to be the way I link records together. Okay? So I'm using SSIS, for example. I'm going to pull records from the system. I'm going to look up the name to do a match in MDS and figure out what's the actual golden record, right? When system A talks about Hungry Coyote, I'll know what that actual record should be or the unique identifier should be for my overall system, okay? And to create that cluster ID, I just click publish. Here I'll put into an annotation that we did the deduplication process.
So anytime someone makes changes, it's tracking who changed what records and when, and they can put in comments to say why they're doing it?
Exactly.
And that's just built in for anything that's in here?
Yeah, that's completely built into MDS. It's a very important part of master data management, right? You need to figure out first you define who has permission to edit the model. You also need traceability, right? You need to see who made this change and for what reason, so you can actually put annotations. You can annotate the entire batch or annotate individual changes as well.
So you're saying that we know who to blame?
Exactly, yeah. Knowing who to blame is always a very important part of not getting fired. So now I've published it all together. We see that we've grouped together. I have my fully functioning model. One last thing, because I can't stop talking about SSIS. Another new feature in 2012 for MDS is they've really improved the way you do bulk loading into MDS. Okay? Every time you create a new entity, it's going to create a staging table for you in your SQL Server database. So bulk loading into MDS becomes a very simple data flow. I'm going to read my source data. I add a couple of columns I need specifically for MDS, and then I just bulk load straight into that system. Okay, the columns I'm adding are pretty simple. It's going to be a batch tag, so some sort of identifier for that batch. And I'm going to say the import type, which tells me, how do I deal with duplicates? Do I merge optimistic? Do I cause an error if there's a duplication? Things like that.
And were those newfangled parameters that I've heard were added to integration services in 2012?
Those are those newfangled parameters. If you're interested in hearing more about SSIS, please come find me in the product pavilion. Okay, so now we have the source table. We're adding our columns. We're going to bulk load into MDS. And then afterwards, there's an MDS store procedure for every entity that says, hey, there's new data ready. Go load it into your system. Just add that real fast. Run this real fast.
So when you load it into those entity-based staging tables, that's not actually going into the entity, it's just like waiting on the porch?
Yeah, you could say it that way, I guess. So in 2008 R2, the way you did the bulk loading is you actually had to map your incoming columns to all the entity columns, and it was a bit tricky. Because an entity isn't just a table, right? There's versioning, there's all kinds of stuff associated with it. Here, I'm just loading straight into the staging table. I run the store procedure, and it gets loaded in. It becomes much easier to do this bulk data loading. And then through the MDS UI, if I click right here, it's going to bring up a page that shows me the latest batches, if I select the right. Yeah, so it shows me the batches. So here's that batch that we just loaded, and it said it loaded 67 records, and everything was loaded fine. So I can see all the bulk loading processes that are going into my system.
That's pretty awesome. Can you get data out of MDS in the same way?
You can get data out of MDS in the same way with creating what's called a subscription view. So a subscription view will actually create a T-SQL view over that entity. And it's really just a T-SQL view right in the database. And from there, you can query it. From SSIS, for example, you can use it as a source for your lookup component if you want to do lookups against it. And subscription views are the main way to integrate your MDS data with external systems or with your BI systems.
So any tool, any data movement tool or query tool or whatever that knows how to read from or write to a SQL table can put data into MDS or pull data out of MDS?
Exactly, right. It is just SQL Server.
So you are going to be so efficient. That is great.
Yes. All right. And that's it. Back to the slides.
So let's see. So we looked at master data services. So yeah, I like that quick and easy model creation. So what I didn't mention, but when you had that cluster ID, That was automatically added because you were using the matching button thing.
That's right.
And then it automatically added that to the model. You didn't have to do like an alter or worry about the data that was in there or anything.
No, exactly.
Wow. So you can probably have that for me, that map for me on Saturday and not Sunday. I love this tool. So we've got master data management. What are those hierarchies? I don't think that you mentioned some of those other things.
So I mentioned it briefly. So this is part of modeling, right? If I want to create a multidimensional model within MDS, I can create a hierarchy. So the example hierarchy I'd mentioned would be I have a state, and a state rolls up to a district, and a district rolls up to a sales region, right? And I can build that type of hierarchy right directly through the MDS web UI.
So we can model the way that our business runs and have the taxonomies and everything right inside MDS.
Exactly.
That's pretty cool. And the fact that it integrates in with data quality services through that through the Excel add-in for finding duplicates, taking advantage of that knowledge, I'll be able to get my team, probably not today, but probably tomorrow, building up some of that knowledge. You'll have this installed and ready to use tomorrow, right?
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
That's great. So I'm going to take off the business guy hat at this point. Not actually physically wearing a hat, thank goodness, but this story that we've been playing out is a story that we see time and time again, talking with customers, talking with the MVPs and other community members that are out there. The problem that we used to have with data is picture the meeting. You start at the beginning of the meeting where the person who's presenting either says, I don't have the data, so this is our best guess. Or the person says, I spent the last week getting this data together because I had to manually compile it and do all this stuff. So those excuses, we don't hear them as often anymore. What we hear instead, and I have meetings like this some days too, instead we hear, all right, so we've got this report, but before we look at the data too closely, be aware that we know that it has these problems.
Yeah.
So enterprise information management and data curation is all about empowering the business user. This phrase, managed democratization, I love that. So think about what Power Pivot does for BI. So a show of hands for who's using Power Pivot. All right,
wow.
So probably about 50% or so. So Power Pivot allows that business user to do a lot of the analytics, like self-service BI, self-service analytics. But there's a strong management component, so IT can still be involved as well. So here, with master data services and data quality services, we're trying to enable the same sort of partnership where IT can put things in place, they can have the rules and the governance that they need, that you need, because it's your data, it's your systems, right? But at the same time, empowering the business users to do things and to contribute in ways that they could never contribute before. So I
remember the story that I was going to tell that during the demo. So the data set we actually used, that is actually real data. The customers are Mass, of course, but that is actually real product SKU and licensing information that was pulled from an MSIT database. So that was actually real data that we went through. Same type of thing. They tried to create a report. The data was bad. They didn't. Actually, I was talking to one customer that actually said they were just starting to roll out BI solutions because for the longest time, I think about 5 years ago, they tried rolling out reporting. The CEO saw the report, saw invalid values, and canceled the entire project. Because he said, I'd rather not have any data at all than make decisions based on bad data.
Yeah.
Okay. And so it was only after that CEO left that they finally started getting a chance to roll out another BI solution again. It was very interesting.
That's awesome. And tell the data deduplication story as well.
Oh, yeah.
This is a true story. It blew my mind when I heard it.
So we're talking to a customer, and And the CEO was there, and he said, no, we don't have data matching problems. We already have a really solid process in place. I'm like, oh, I'd love to hear about that. He's like, well, every month we get about 10,000 records, 10,000 new customers in that we need to merge into our system. So on Friday, 10 of us take home 1,000 records, and we do the matching and deduplication over the weekend. And the process works perfect, right? And you can see the other people, his employees in the room, kind of not thinking it's such a great, fantastic process, right? And
Does that manager sound familiar at all?
Yeah.
So the closing point, so we're just about right on time here, so we're going to have 15 minutes for Q&A before they kick us out of the room. But the final point here, it is not an all-or-nothing solution. Even though we design the tools to work together as well as possible, and even though the integration story, as you move forward, you'll probably want to use multiple pieces, we have customers who are using DQS and not doing anything else, so they're not integrating it into their data warehouse. They're just using it as an interactive data cleansing tool and manually integrating it into their information management processes. We have customers that are using DQS that don't have, that are using MDS but aren't using DQS for data cleansing. And of course, everyone in the world uses and loves integration services because it is a divine gift to the world of data.
Right. So I was actually talking to a customer in Ireland, meeting them, and they were a great example of people not being ready to roll out a full EIM solution. They had 30 subsidiaries. Every subsidiary has its own definition of customer, and they know there's a lot of duplication in there, right? But they just don't have time to tackle that problem yet. But in the meantime, their business users are saying, I need to create these reports, right? So what they were planning on doing is rolling out DQS to their business user. And they kept talking, like, it was like Shelly or something like that. Oh, Shelly's going to love this. Shelly's going to do this. It was like one of our persona meetings within Microsoft. And because what they planned to do was have Shelly go through and do all the cleansing. And even though they weren't ready to roll out the full end-to-end solution, they knew they could leverage the rules that Shelly was generating, right, put it into the DQS knowledge base so that when they are finally ready to roll out a full data, like, curated system, they could actually just leverage those rules that were already created. So I thought it was a really neat approach. And you see, some customers will enter through the SSIS, some will enter through MDS, some will enter through DQS. And,
yeah, neat. So there is additional content here at the conference. So you know there's lots of sessions going on. Build slides. So Matt is doing a session on incremental ETL using the change data capture components that were introduced in SSIS in 2012, including CDC with Oracle.
That's right. There's the upgrading SSIS packages talk that's also tomorrow, and then the BI Power Hour, which we're both presenting at. Never been to the BI Power Hour before. It's a very fun session. We throw a lot of stuff and shirts into the audience, so it's amusing.
There is a hands-on lab for integration services, so you get a chance to see some of the new features that were introduced in SQL Server 2012. For those of you guys, pretty much everyone raised your hand for integration services. Who's using 2012 or looking at it today? So many fewer. So awesome. I started using integration services as a BI consultant in 2005. 2012 is the biggest, most significant release of integration services since it was first released. So if you have not looked at it, but you're using other versions today, definitely do yourself a favor and look at that. Matt and I will both be hanging out for much of the week at the Credible Consistent Data booth down on the show floor. There is a brand new certification exam implementing a data warehouse with SQL Server 2012, so great exam. I'm actually hoping to get a couple exams in this week because they have a test center here at the show. And
you'll
find us both there. You could also possibly find us in the speaker lounge at 4 o'clock on the days when we're not presenting.
Yes.
So
contact info.
So the slides are all available, so you don't need to write anything down. But we both blog. I blog very infrequently these days. We both tweet. I am too old. I don't understand Twitter. But we are as in touch as we can. And we love to hear what you're doing with the tools, what you love, what you hate, what you want to see, what you are delighted to see today. There's lots of additional tracks, or track resources, I should say, both online and here at the show. And
fill out your evals.
Fill out your evaluations. The sad thing is, when we fill out our audience evaluation, even though we're going to give you all nines because you have been awesome, we do not get to win any prizes because we're Microsoft employees. And just as one question, as you're filling out the evaluation, if you have seen Matt Mason present at previous conferences before he moved back to Canada, and you have noticed during this talk how he is saying oot a boot more than he has in previous years, mention on the comments that Matt needs to move back to Redmond because we miss him dearly. So that is what we have. We will be here as long as there are people with questions. So thank you very, very much.
Thanks, everyone.